The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is strongly advised. Hello and welcome to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw. Tonight's broadcast is a pre-recorded show, so we are not accepting telephone calls or emails. Joanne will be back live next week to answer all of your questions regarding gardening and garden design. So sit back, relax, and enjoy an encore presentation of Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw.
Welcome to Down the Garden Path, where we discuss down-to-earth tips and advice for your plants, gardens, and landscapes every week. And as a designer, I think it's important and possible to have a great garden that is low maintenance. And I just love that we are able to talk to different guests and different experts in their field to help us maintain our gardens. So I'm as our season kind of winds down, there's all these different things we need to think about or sometimes not think about in the garden. And this time of year and tonight, we are going to talk about roses and protecting our roses for the winter. There's lots of, I think, some misinformation out there. And so we're going to debunk all of that. So I want to welcome Colleen Viscoff as a return guest. Colleen has been on the show before. I hope you remember her. I'll read you a little bit about her. She's an artist, designer, and award-winning gardener. Colleen is a Peterborough Master Gardener. She is a Vice Chair of Communities in Bloom, Present Coordinator of the Bernardo Garden, and the Ontario Coordinator of Plant Watch, a Nature Watch initiative. But her first love is roses. Welcome back to the show, Colleen.
Thanks, Joanne. It's great to be here.
I'm glad. I'm so glad you could join us. And I don't think it's too late. I think, you know, we're kind of pushing the envelope as far as winterizing our garden, right?
Actually, no.
Oh,
not
okay.
For roses, no. Roses like to be, we don't cut anything, any of our roses back at all in the fall. Actually, just those really, really long canes that might get broken by wind or ice. And we leave them because all of that green has to go back into the roots to make the roots really strong.
Okay.
And when there's been a really, really hard frost, you know, when everything else is all brown,
yes,
that's when you heal up the roses.
Oh, okay. So good. So our timing is good.
Perfect.
So before we get into winterizing, I did want to check in with you because we had here in Southern Ontario an incredibly hot summer.
Yes.
And dry summer. How did your roses or roses in general do this season?
It's really interesting because a lot of them went, they didn't have their huge, gorgeous flush of blooms that they usually have in July. They tended to just kind of, they didn't die back, but they just kind of settled in. It looked like they were waiting for something.
Mm-hmm.
When the cooler days of September came along, they just, it was like July. They were crazy blooms. So the drought roses, basically, believe it or not, are fairly drought tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
One of the major gardens, and I was trying to do some research before this, but I can't find the name of the person. It doesn't really matter. But they have over 4,000 roses in their show gardens.
Wow!
And they water twice a week for 15 minutes only. And the second season of doing that, the roses have never been better.
Mm.
So roses don't need as much water as we think they do.
Right.
And in spite of the drought, most roses that I saw this year are doing pretty well.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Good to know, huh?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we do know they like it hot. They like the sun, so they like, you know, the more sun, the better. And I don't know, I guess I have never did think that they needed a ton of water. I think of other plants that really show us, like hydrangeas, that type of thing, that really, you know, tell us when they need it, right?
Yeah.
Even hostas can kind of, you know, look a little shriveled when they're getting a little bit thirsty. But roses seem to thrive. But I think the extended heat, you think that was kind of cut back on some of the blooms?
I think that the blooms were not as prolific. But, you know, if you have lots of mulch on them and, you know, we hand water right up from the roots, so there's no overhead watering or anything.
Right.
But, they were not as prolific. When I see photos from last year and this year, they didn't have as many blooms, but they're all alive. They haven't died.
Well, that's good. That's
the
important.
The roots go deeper when there's a drought, and that's what you want, right?
Yes.
Because then they're stronger.
That's right. That's right. And that's why you don't want to water as often, because I think the people that spoil their roses and, you know, water every day or something like that, you know, that the roots are much more shallow. And then when they are there, you know, you go away for a week and there is a drought, then that's when your plants really suffer.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. No, they don't like to have their feet wet.
No, for sure. For sure. And I think it shows you that, you know, we can have a low maintenance rose garden or rose garden part of your garden. And that babying all your plants really doesn't pay off in the end, you know, because sometimes tough love is the best way to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just like kids. Huh?
That's right. Just like a kids. So in addition to this hot and incredibly dry summer that we had this past season, we also have really enjoyed a wonderful long fall.
Uh-huh.
Don't you agree? I mean, it's been, even today's temperature is nice. Tomorrow they're saying 19 degrees again. You know, so we are getting a little bit more moisture. And I do a little bit of tidying up in my gardens and kind of give my clients some pointers on what to do and what not to do. But I'm not a huge advocate of the concept of putting the garden to bed or cleaning out your garden and tidying it all up in the fall. Because I just think there's, you know, lots still happening, right? And and lots for the birds and the beneficial insects to enjoy. So when it comes to roses, though, there are a few things that we need to take care of. But I'm happy to hear that we haven't missed that. That really we still, because we're still looking for a killing frost, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
I mean, the hostas are all, you know, slimy, and those are the ones that you want to get out of your garden, and the lilies and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else, we need to leave spaces for the little birds to hide, and all the beneficial insects need places to overwinter. And if we clean up our gardens, we totally eliminate that habitat for them. Little chickadees love the little seed heads on blooms. And, you know, as far as roses are concerned, they really need to let all that green go back into the ground. Because that's all those nutrients, and whenever anything is green, they all need to go back to the roots. So that's why we leave them standing.
Wow. Okay.
And you don't really want to kill them up until you've had, as you say, a killing frost.
Yeah. That's funny because it's almost like bulbs. I'd never thought of that with roses, that you want the green to go back to the root.
Uh-huh.
You know, isn't that what we do? Like, why we don't cut the bulbs off the leaves off bulbs, right? Until the leaves have died, because we want all that energy to go back to the bulb. So that analogy has never occurred to me before with the roses. So tell us a little bit about that. Like,
well, all the plants, you know, anything that blooms, all the nutrients from the soil are sucked up by the roots and shot up the stems, and at the top of that, all this gorgeous burst of bloom. But in the fall, all those nutrients that have been sucked out of the roots are going, hey, wait a sec, we have a long winter here. We're going to suck all that back down again. And we cut that off. We're actually saying to the roots, well, we don't really care about you. You know, we don't want a nice, tidy garden, so we're going to everything all down, and the roots are going, well, crap, now I'm going to have to find my own nutrients as quick as I can. So anything that we can do to put all the nutrients back into the roots for winter. We have a long winter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
we do.
In southern Ontario,
yeah.
It's really cold and bleak. So we need to give our plants and roses, of course, as much as we can. And then we hill them up with 4 or 5 inches of compost, and then we put mulch over that.
Oh, okay.
Especially the roses that are grafted, you know, the ones that they've got a root and then some fabulous, brilliant hybridizer grafts another one on, which always amazes me how they do this. And so the root is really strong, but the rose on top is not necessarily.
Okay.
And so a grafted rose, all of that area where it's grafted needs to be buried beneath the earth at least 4 to 5 inches when you plant them. And so in the fall, if that's not buried and there's any space around it, it water gets in there and it freezes. Mm. And then when it thaws and there's a wind, it rots. It's called wind rock, and it actually rocks the plant back and forth.
Really?
And the root cannot stand that. So by hilling them up after the frost, we're preventing that from happening. And there's a point at which if you do it too soon, it's nice and cozy and warm in there, and you get all kinds of little bugs and little
critters.
Mice and moles thinking, ooh, this is a nice place to
yeah.
hide out. So I know that we do it when it's really cold, but that's kind of when we have to do it.
Right, right. So, yeah, the temptation is to do it before it's too cold for us, but really we're not the most important thing in the equation, right?
Right on.
So, you know, let's go over that again. So how much compost?
4 to 5 inches.
4 to 5 inches, and then another couple of inches of mulch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, that's a lot. But I guess it's a hill. But now let's talk about cutting back. So we're really not cutting back the roses?
No.
Okay.
However, having said that...
There's always an exception.
You know how sometimes a rose will shoot up a cane that's like about 6 feet high?
Yes.
Those are the ones you need to cut back to about 3.5 or 4 feet.
Okay.
Maybe 3 feet. But what happens is if they break in the snow and the ice or the wind breaks them, that area that breaks off is a great place for disease and insects and stuff to hide. So you want to keep the plants, and it also does that thing, it rocks them back and forth. So take off the ones that are arching maybe 6 feet high and go back to 3 or 4 feet.
Okay.
But other than that, I wouldn't cut anything back. Anything that's broken, yes.
Yes. So even if there's bloom still on it?
Well, take the blooms off and put them beside your bed. Yeah.
The garden bed or the bed, your bed at home?
Your bed at home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So now, is this the same with, I mean, I know you said specifically grafted roses, but there are many types of roses as well. So would you feel that, you know, shrub, like let's talk a little bit about shrub roses, for instance, or I guess would carpet roses, to me, I picture carpet roses as being like just mini shrub roses.
Right.
Yeah.
I think most of them are, when you read the tags, and I don't always believe what the tags say,
so I try to do
research before I buy them. But if they're a ground cover, you can pile a bunch of leaves on top of them, shredded leaves or compost or mulch, and they're probably going to be just fine. It's the grafted ones that are really get into trouble in our zone fours and fives here.
Okay.
So most roses, we actually take a bag of really good compost, sea compost, for example, or something like that, and just dump it over the top of them. And then we go around to our neighbor and help them rake all their sugar maple leaves, and we put them on top.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it's just, and that's fine with the shrub and the carpet roses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
As far as the grafted goes, is that mostly hybrid teas or some of the Floribundas?
Mostly the hybrid teas.
Okay.
You know, the word hybrid basically is they've put two things together, and most often those are grafted roses. And it should say so on the tag, but if I don't, lots of times in the very beginning, I always pulled the tag off and thought, wasn't that pretty, and then I didn't save it, but I do now.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of information on there, and it's really important to know if it's grafted, you have to heal it up. If it's not grafted and you forget, you're probably going to be okay.
Yeah, okay.
Most of the garden roses, what we call garden roses, are the shrubs or the ground covers, landscape roses, those kinds of things, are hardy and pretty disease resistant. So if it says hardy to zone 4 or 5, and you miss healing them up,
right,
you're probably going to be okay.
You're going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's better to
do that.
Mm-hmm. I think customer demand, you know, gone are the day that you accidentally are picking up that rare rose bush that's really temperamental, right? Like, I think unless you're really going out of your way looking for it, most of the nurseries are carrying local nurseries, especially now that the big box stores are selling a lot of plants too, with not as many, you know, let's say educated staff to help the consumer, that
right.
Really the plants there should really be the tough stuff.
Yes, they should. I mean, rose trees, I don't know if you have a rose tree or not, but and there's a really interesting thing that if you're interested in how they do it in Minnesota, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
It's called the Minnesota Tip. And you'll see they have a video, and they just do big, long rows in these rose gardens, and they actually tip the roses over and bury them.
Yeah.
And with a rose tree, you have to do that.
Yes.
I know it sounds crazy, but... the rose tree is grafted on a tall stick.
Yeah.
And it's that graft part that has to be buried. Well, that's quite a...
Yeah, that's quite
a
commitment. Yeah, for sure. It's a commitment, and not everybody has that space to lay it down. You know, that's could be a 4-foot, 5-foot trench you'd need to dig.
Yep.
Right?
We just fill ours with annuals in the summer, or bulbs.
Okay.
And that space is always left for the rose tree.
Oh, all right. So how many rose trees do you have?
I actually have 2.
Okay.
And one of them has to be buried, and one of them is from Ontario, grown in Ontario, grafted onto a rugosa stem, and I've been told that it does not have to be buried. Now, it survived last winter,
okay,
which was mild, and it sort of did okay this year. Next year, it will be telling whether that's true or not.
Whether that's true. Okay.
So I'm open to whether that's actually the truth or not.
Now, I did have a friend who also, a fellow landscape designer, so she took branches, evergreen branches, and she tied them to her rose tree around the graft, and really tied them, like really, really insulated that graft. Now, it was still above ground, but she... you know, felt like she had read it somewhere and thought she would try it. And so for one season anyway, she did have success and it did well. So
good.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. It's just pretend, yeah, giving you some food for thought.
Well, I may do that with the one that's supposed to be hardy, but I don't want to take a chance on the other one. I've had it for 3 years now. So
yes.
But I think that makes really good sense.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially they sell all those branches, right, for decorating in our urns. So she just thought, well, I'm just going to buy some and put them to work to insulate her rose tree. So that was her tip.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, for sure. So how many, tell us a little bit about your rose garden.
When I started out, I think when you had asked me at one time, if I'd ever bought roses from a catalog.
Oh, yes.
I went to a lecture at a garden show, and this guy showed hundreds of pictures of these beautiful roses. And then he gave us all a catalog. I came home and checked off what I wanted and went down to the place and was expecting to see rows of potted roses with little flowers on them. This was my first year of gardening. And my $100 for my 10 roses, and came out with a black plastic bag full of brown twigs.
Oh, bare roots, yeah.
Almost died. So not enough instructions. Planted them all the first year. They were gorgeous. This year, I lost all but two.
Wow.
Because I didn't plant them deep enough. I didn't hill them up. Stuck them in the ground. So that was a really good lesson. You buy roses from a catalog, make sure that the company is reputable. And,
right.
And there should be feedback, et cetera. You really need to do some research.
But
So over the years, I've got a lot of roses on sale, and some of them worked and some of them didn't.
Yeah.
But I'm loving all of the new, what they call garden roses, the ones that, the knockouts, the landscape roses. I even put them on the boulevard, and they're gorgeous. And the dogs all, their business on them.
Yeah.
And they bloom all summer.
Oh, wow. So tell me a bit about that. So you have a sidewalk, so you put them right up between the road and the sidewalk, what we've called on this show the hell strip. I don't know if you've read Evelyn Haddon's book called The Hell Strip. So you have roses on your hell strip?
These are the drift roses.
Okay.
And they're low growing. They're no taller than maybe 6 or 7 inches high.
Wow.
And they spread out horizontally. And this was a really bad summer to do that. But we planted them in... June.
Okay.
And, of course, had to water them
every,
two or three days, and they struggled, I'm telling you.
Yeah. But we struggled, didn't we? We struggled.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was hot.
Yeah. In September, they started to bloom, and they have not quit.
Wow.
They're still covered in buds, so they're fabulous.
Excellent.
I just cannot say enough about
the
drift. They're one of those roses that if you can dig a hole, as it says on the tag, you can plant a rose.
Excellent.
They're
now,
awesome.
They haven't gone through the winter and see how it manages with the snow and the salt, right?
Not on that boulevard.
Okay.
But we have them beside our driveway, and they've been there for, 4 years. So there's the same kind of salt that there is out on the street. But I'm going to cover them with a whole layer of leaves, and I'm not going to mulch the leaves. I'm going to leave them.
Okay.
As they come off the tree.
Right.
And that, I'm hoping, will be enough of a barrier to the salt and stuff.
Oh,
but we'll see.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that is a great tip.
They're hardy to, environmental conditions, whatever that means.
For sure, for sure. And they come, in an assortment of colors?
They come in peach and apricot and red. Red is gorgeous. It's called cherry pie, I think, and then they have pink. These are bright, sort of fuchsia pink.
Okay. I remember you talking about cherry pie the last time you were here. I didn't know it was a drift rose, but I did go looking for it, and I couldn't find it. And all the ones that I, because I did, after our conversation, I probably added about 6 shrub roses, little ones, more carpet roses to my gardens, because you kind of got me tempted. And I could see with other people that I knew had them, just that continuous bloom, right?
Yeah.
And, but I couldn't find a red. Like every red was too fuchsia for me, and I'm not a pink girl at all, and especially not a fuchsia pink. So I really had a hard time finding red. I think because I mean, being a landscape designer, when I could find time to do it, right? Mid-season, it was a little late, I think, with the supply of red. So
if you can't see them next spring, you contact me and I'll find some for you.
Okay. I definitely, I will take you up on that one. Okay.
Okay. That would be fun.
Yeah. Excellent. So we have a theme here with mulch and with compost. I'm wondering about climbing roses. Now, they tend to be, I find them, people have them at two stages. When I visit clients' homes or neighbors, they've got the ones that are kind of struggling. They planted them a couple years ago and they're kind of just there. Or I find they're the other extreme and they are like a wall of thorny stems and they're arching above and they're trying to, keep them attached to the trellis type of thing. So let's talk a bit about what, is there winter care or anything that can help with roses, with climbing roses?
two things to remember is never, ever cut a climbing rose back to the ground, no matter what season it is, because they would have to start all over.
Okay.
And they only bloom, like if you picture canes growing straight up, the blooms are only on the branches that come out horizontally.
Okay.
So anything that grows straight up will only have a bloom at the very, very top, or if you need to start training them. There's a lot of good websites, and one of them is Paul Zimmerman Roses. And he's been a rose expert, and his stuff is really easy to understand. He's got some great videos.
Okay.
And the other thing is there are people who are a proponent of taking it off the climber, lying it down on the ground, and covering it.
Mm.
I don't see the point of that,
mm-hmm.
because I haven't got any scientific proof that it makes any difference.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're pulling it back up again, and you tend to break the cane.
Yeah.
So I only have two or three climbing roses, and I leave them. I don't cut back. I do some pruning in the spring.
Okay.
But they don't need a lot. They are a different cat, sure.
Yeah.
And they do require some specialized pruning. But as I said, there is a bit on my website, but there's a lot on Paul Zimmerman. He wrote a book called Roses Are Easy, or something like Easy Care Roses.
Okay.
Awesome book.
Excellent. Roses Are Easy. Okay.
I can send you the name of that.
Okay.
Or I don't remember the exact name.
Yeah. No, that's great. So would we also hill them then? Like, because do they have a graft? Like, do climbing roses aren't grafted? Correct?
No, they're not. I shouldn't say never, but I've never seen one.
Okay.
I'm sure that there is some hybridizer somewhere who has tried it, but
yeah.
Generally speaking, the roses that we have access to, our own root.
Okay.
Roses, but I think it's important to hill them up still.
Okay. So still hill them, even though they're on a trellis.
Yeah. And don't, if there are any hanging over out into the wind, tie them to the trellis, tie them all together.
Ooh, okay.
You know, put a big string around them and tie them up together, or an old nylon stocking. Doesn't look very nice, but it works really well, and it's soft and won't hurt their stems. But don't let them blow around in the wind and bang against the house. Mm. That's just going to break them and damage the cane.
Yeah. Okay. Now, this isn't really winterizing them, but in the spring, like if your rose bush gets to be a little top heavy, let's say, like it almost reminds me of, you know, the common lilac where all the lilacs are, you know, way up ahead, up top. And then, but at ground, at, you know, our average height of five feet or so, all you're looking at are branches. And that can be sometimes that happen the same, right? With climbing roses.
Mm-hmm. They do need to be trained. If you can, it's hard to do on radio, but if you can, picture where you take the stem and gently turn it into a 45-degree angle and attach it to your trellis. And then as it grows, bring it back on a 45-degree angle. And every time you do that, have little branches that come up from that cane, and those will be the bloomers. So you have blooms all the way up.
Okay.
Every few years, you're going to have to cut out those middle canes and create new climbing cane.
Wow.
Again, that's kind of hard to describe on the video.
Yeah.
But,
it sounds almost like basket weaving. So you kind of do need to manipulate them.
Yeah. And sometimes in the beginning, I know with mine, because I didn't do it in the beginning, they're big and thick.
Mm.
So I have to do a little bit at a time. I do some this week, and then next week I can take it a little bit more.
Okay.
Because if I'm too hard on it, it just breaks.
Right. Okay.
So you just want to gently. It only needs to be 45 degrees,
okay.
And then wind it back, and you can weave them in amongst each other. I mean, that's how people's houses get covered with blooms, and you do have to do some pruning to keep it that way.
Yeah.
Okay. But once you get that concept, it's easy to see.
I see. Okay. Yeah. So I would say that's kind of the advanced, I'm going to say advanced user, but advanced grower, right? With venturing out into climbing rows.
Well, yes and no. I don't want people to be afraid to do that because there's so much on, but you just have to be careful when you go online at videos, you know, make sure that the person knows what they're talking about. And, you know, if they want to write to you and they need some websites, I'm happy to pass that on.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, though I think one of the things I want to mention about listening to other people's videos and watching them is to make sure that they're in a similar zone or in your zone, correct?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It does us no good whatsoever in zone 4 and 5 to listen to zone 7 people in South Carolina talk about how they care for their roses. You know, it's just a different, yes, they get winter and yes, they have, you know, some frost and stuff like that, but it's still not what we deal with. So, as much as there is some great information there on the internet for gardening and for roses and specifically, but always, you know, look, you know, search through and really take it with a grain of salt, right? And whoever's talking to you, because I've done that myself, you know, I've gotten keen about something and I'm listening to the person talk and then I'm kind of cluing in and I'm like, wait a minute here. I don't think that I can do that in our zone. So that,
right.
You know, not all zones and gardens are created equal. So that's something to really remember.
Because also you can have a little, you know, microclimate. Like our garden is below street level behind the house.
Okay.
And we have a little microclimate. So I can actually push it a little bit to zone 6 for some things, but not in the front garden at
right.
all, because it's street level, wide open.
Yeah.
So you do have to be careful. But you know what? I like people to try things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't spend, you know, $95 and buy something and then experiment with that.
Yeah.
Experiment with the cheaper ones.
The ones on sale.
Exactly.
That type of thing. And there could be, you know, there's some nurseries that are still clearing things out. So it's not, now we talked about it's not too late to protect our roses, but if we do come across a rose bush or two that's for sale in a nursery or being cleared out on October 31st, is it too late to plant them?
No, it's not.
Okay.
I've planted right up when the snow is blowing and, you know, it's not ideal.
Right.
But if you find a really good bargain, sort of lift it out of the pot a bit and make sure that the bigger roots are not in a circle, because you're going to have to prune those out.
Okay.
Sometimes at the end of the season, if some of the big box stores have roses that when they order them, they don't know how old the rose is or how long it's been in the pot. And if it's been in there for 2 seasons, the poor thing is growing in a circle.
Right.
So you have to be, you know, be brave, take it out of the pot, untangle the roots, wash them off if you have to, and then trim it back really well.
So you could trim the roots?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
That's not going to harm it?
No. No. Yeah. You don't. The thing about them growing in a circle is that's the way they'll stay, and eventually they'll strangle themselves.
Okay.
You want roots that spread out, because those roots are the ones that are going to bring the moisture and the nutrients back into the rose. So, if you're going to plant now, make sure you plant with lots of compost. Give it a good watering, but not too much.
Mm-hmm.
And say Father, Son, Holy Ghost on it.
and just hope it's...
Give it some leaves.
Yes, that's right.
Hope for the best.
And hope for the best.
Yeah.
Well, and anyway, if it has been a good deal, too, and, you know, they're selling them for $5 or $3 or something like that, it doesn't owe you anything. It's just the cost of your effort in digging the hole, really.
Yeah. And you know what? In many cases, they'll be fine.
Yeah.
If you plant for your zone and you get a really good bargain, I'm all for planting $5, $10 roses because... Okay. Chances are they're going to be okay.
Okay. Now,
so go for it.
Now, let's say you find them. I mean, I've kind of done this with some other plants where I don't know where it's going to go. Like, I don't, you know, I want to get it in the ground for winter, but yet it's not in its permanent home. Could you, like, I know you said about the roots and stuff, but could you plant the pot in, like, bury the pot?
You can, as long as the hole pot is below the surface of the earth.
Okay.
So you'd have to dig a nice big hole. Bury the whole thing, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is, so that's a couple tips for our listeners, right? So if you do come across a great deal, and you have a perfect spot for a rose bush, for that specific rose bush, then it is not too late to go ahead and plant it. If you find a good deal and you don't have that spot ready yet, let's say you're doing a new bed or something like that next year, then it's okay to, you know, just as long as you dig a hole somewhere in your yard and bury that whole pot with the rose in the pot, and then come spring, then you can kind of take a look at the roots and put it in its forever home in the spring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would lay it down when you bury it.
Would you?
Cover up everything.
Oh, okay.
So, yep. Cover up the whole thing and then pile branches on top or leaves or whatever, leaves and then branches. You can prune your yew, your YEW.
Uh-huh.
Time of year and put some of them in your winter arrangement or on, you know, on top of your roses or around your rose tree. I'm going to try that. I love that idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. It's, you know, it's funny that, you know, sometimes when you get into fall, and I know with today being, you know, Halloween, October 31st, you know, everything's going to go like a flip of a light switch. Everything's going to go to Christmas tomorrow, right?
I know,
and
I know.
So, and then gardening really kind of falls by the wayside. But really, there still is quite a bit of season out there still. And our gardens are happy and the pollinators are happy. And there's still some things that we can do in our yards, right?
You can still plant tulips right until the earth is frozen.
That's right. Yep. Still planting our bulbs. And that brings me, actually, that was a great segue, Colleen. Thank you very much for that. In that it is, we're kind of bordering on the edge of garlic planting. But, you always hear, and a lot of people say that about, oh, plant garlic or onions around your roses. You know, that whole companion planting strategy. Do you do that? What do you think?
A couple of things. Companion planting, just before I get to the garlic, companion planting is an awesome thing to do in a rose garden because all those plants that are underneath your roses keep bare stems from showing and they keep the roots shaded from the really, really blistering sun and they keep the earth moist.
Okay.
So, you know, plant your low-growing perennials, your... Oh, let me think. I can't even think of any. Lilies. You can even plant some of your annuals in there. I let the violets grow in my garden because those leaves are great for keeping the stems cool.
Okay.
As for garlic, there aren't any scientific studies that were done with roses. But they have proven that with agricultural crops, that planting garlic in amongst any of the agricultural plants does, you know, keep aphids away.
Mm.
Having said that, aphids, I know we don't like them, but they are food for beneficial insects like lacewings.
Mm-hmm.
So when we start killing off the bad bugs, we take away the food source for the good bugs.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to go from a non-spring to a non-spring garden. And this is our third summer. And we did have some aphids for sure, but far fewer than last year.
Yeah.
And last year was fewer than the year before.
Okay.
So for us, we're working towards not spraying or not getting rid of any of the bugs. And so we're seeing more butterflies, more bees, more birds in the garden. It's a hard thing to do because the first thing you want to do is get out there and get rid of those and just squirt them off with the hose.
Right.
So it doesn't hurt to plant garlic or the garlic chives or any of the alliums because they're gorgeous. And besides, you can eat the garlic.
Yes.
So go ahead and do it. And if it works, great. There is no scientific proof, and not that that matters. But so I don't have a definitive answer for that. But if it works with agricultural plants, it just might work with roses.
Yeah, yeah. My problem there is that I don't know if visually, I guess that's the designer in me. I mean, yes, it's good that it's beneficial if there is some benefit to it. But I don't know that it, you know, they add to each other. Do you know what I mean? Visually, I think some of the some of the leaves on the foliage on the garlic can get quite tall. Maybe chives, maybe something that's kind of lower growing. And like you mentioned, the bulbs, like planting some allium bulbs now, too. I love alliums, and we know that squirrels do not like them, and so they're not going to be digging them up like they would your tulips and crocuses. So. Definitely daffodils and alliums are a great thing to plant at this time of year. And I think some of the tinier ones or shorter ones also bloom about, you know, kind of a nice time as far as timing with roses, too. And even when their color is gone from their seed heads, the seed heads still are pretty interesting.
Oh, they are gorgeous.
Yeah. So I could see them being kind of a nice addition to your rose garden, but the big tall eating garlic, I don't know. I mean, I continue every year to attempt to grow it, with limited success, just because of my space. But so when it does kind of pop up and things like that, I don't know. I just can't picture it. But
I think your garden has to be. What works for you. Mm-hmm. You know, I want my garden to be healthy, but I want it to be pretty, too.
Yes.
And to me, I love to buy my garlic at the farmer's market, so I really am happy to leave that up to somebody else.
Yes, yeah.
I'm okay to squirt off the aphids with a hose and think that I'm, you know, doing a good thing. I mean, I really would love to spray everything, but I just don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want it in the soil. I don't want it in the water.
Yeah.
So I'm working really hard to...
To avoid that.
Have a healthy garden.
Now, would you say, aphids kind of were like, they used to be the biggest issue, but now with Japanese beetles, do you have a problem with Japanese beetles in your roses?
Actually, no. I haven't seen any this year.
Okay.
Maybe one. And nothing really gets rid of them. And one of the things that I did find out is that when you squish them, the pheromones that are in the bug draws other bugs in. And
gross.
So do the traps.
Oh.
So I don't know what the answer is. Mm-hmm. I've been lucky enough not to. I think a couple of years ago, they were really bad. And I don't have a lot of lilies, so I don't have a lot of lily beetles.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they're not in the neighborhood.
Right.
I tend to just kind of pick them up and put them in a bag and seal up the bag and let them go to sleep.
Yeah, and go that way. Okay.
Yeah, it's hard not to want to get rid of all the things that are eating everything.
Yeah, for sure. But you're right. I mean, the circle of life, right? So if we're getting rid of the food source for other bugs that are eating, you know, even more, it really does make more sense. And as the longer we, I think, with Ontario having that whole herbicide and pesticide ban, you know, it's going to be interesting to see that how the plants can do, you know, over time.
Yeah, and you're right. It is over time. They will adapt. It's just that the process of us going through that adaptation can be ugly or painful. And
yeah.
We just have to do things in the garden and look for disease resistant. Nothing is disease repellent, but there are a lot of the new roses. Some of my roses never get a bug on them. The leaves never get eaten.
Wow.
Some of them, the leaves look like they're lace. So I tend to put things in front of them.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned a little while ago about your first exposure to catalog shopping. So that was one of the questions I have that I think our listeners sometimes, in the dead of winter when we're dreaming about our gardens and those catalogs or in social media, those pictures come around. And I was going to add one of my questions I was going to ask you is, have you ever ordered roses from a catalog? So you have. Now, have you done it again since that first kind of unsuccessful time?
No, actually, I haven't because I'm a really tactile person and I am a visual person. And I have nothing against bare root roses, but I tend to because I live in and have a garden in Ontario, I tend to buy roses that are grown in Ontario out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And I shouldn't say just Ontario, because there are roses that are grown out in the field in Winnipeg, you can imagine, outside all year.
Yeah.
And some of those roses, I think they're parkland roses, I think some of them are, grown in Winnipeg, they're as hardy as it gets. And I want to look at the rose. I want to talk to the person who's selling it to see where they come from.
Okay.
And then I look up the breeder of the roses.
Really?
I even send them a note and say, why, you know, what is it about this rose that you're promoting? Why do you think this is so great? And if they don't answer back, I don't buy the rose.
Oh, wow. So do they really answer back?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Well, our listeners, now with social media and emailing, do you just emailing them or you're?
Yep. No, I send them an email because or else I phone them.
Oh, my goodness. The old fashioned, you're going retro. You're phoning them.
It's just so much easier to ask somebody a question when you're on the phone with them. And I usually have very specific questions. So, because I plant roses for clients too. And I want to look like I'm a success, so those plants need to do well for me or I don't look good.
Yeah.
Vanity there, I have to say.
Yeah, well, that never occurred to me, Colleen. Thank you for that tip.
I think it's really important to do some research. Mm-hmm. The catalog pictures are gorgeous. They spend a lot of money with a photographer.
And Photoshop.
Right? And Photoshop. You need to know, is it hardy in my zone?
Yeah.
How tall is it going to get?
Mm-hmm.
How wide is it going to spread?
Yes, wide.
Yeah. And what kind of care does it need? I've got some roses that, man, oh, man, I've had to give them away because they just were like monsters. They just got, 12, 13 feet high, and they were, the stems on them were as big as my wrist. Well, I'm exaggerating a bit. But they were just too big for my garden, and I did not read the tag.
Okay.
But having said that, a lot of the tags do not tell you enough information.
Mm-hmm.
So if you buy something and you're not sure about it and you're paying a lot of money, don't buy it. Go home and research it. Back.
For sure. Well, and also the tag, so either the tag has either not enough information or it has a lot of information, but it may not be in your zone.
Exactly.
And that goes for, not only roses, but, trees and shrubs and, evergreens, that type of thing. So Japanese maples, so how that tree, and same with the information online, you can Google that tree. I've done that where I've designed a garden and put a tree in there or a shrub in there. And then the client has gone in and Googled it and said, well, no, that's going to be too big. And I'm like, yeah, it's going to be that big in BC, but in Ontario, it's not going to be that big,
Exactly.
So so that's something so if you're doing that extended research and actually contacting the breeder, then you can verify that information is applicable to your garden or our gardens.
Yeah. And you've got a better chance of success. I mean, mm-hmm. we put some shrubs in, gave, a whole big design thing on a garden and made some recommendations and said, your watering system, and this is for people who have roses and a watering system, you cannot have those, whatever you call those little things that come out of the ground, you cannot have them any higher than like two or three inches off the ground because you're watering your roses from the top. None of the water is going to get to the roots.
Mm.
And we put in some shrubs and told the client that you cannot put a shrub in that spot because your watering is too high. Well, we can't lower it because. So they put it in and the plant didn't do well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, didn't it? And I said, well, here's the research. Just, you have to, there are so many things to consider, not just the plant itself, but where you put it.
Yeah.
And how much care is it going to need? And it's for roses. Roses like to have water at the roots only.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I spray them off sometimes when they get a little dusty or,
mm-hmm.
Where I think that they need it. They probably don't.
Yeah.
So watering is really, really important. And if you have a watering system, your plants may not do as well as somebody who doesn't.
Right.
I know that sounds weird.
Yeah, no, everything's so, the watering system is the cure-all and end-all, but you have to listen to your plants.
Yes, Definitely. Right.
Definitely.
And a rose shouldn't need water any more often than once a week if it's really, really bad.
Yeah.
But every couple of weeks should be enough.
Yeah. Yep.
Once it's established.
Yes.
Course.
Yes. Yeah. Not right after planting it, but for sure.
No.
For sure.
No.
All right. Well, time is flying. I do want to leave time, though, to how can our listeners get a hold of you? Do you, your website?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you give us?
It's lush-gardens.com.
Gardens.com. Mm-hmm. And you are also a garden designer?
Yes.
And you mm-hmm. install gardens yourself as well?
Well, me and some people.
Yeah, like me. We have a little bit, yep. a few helping hands are always good.
Exactly.
And your area is the Peterborough area?
Peterborough and north of Stony Lake.
Oh, okay. Yeah. North of Stony Lake. Excellent.
And Stony Lake, and then the northern part, you can grow those drift roses, and they bloom all summer.
Excellent.
And they survive the winter, so.
Yeah.
And there's only four.
Okay. And yeah, because people think that's kind of cottage country, right? And people start to think that their gardening is more limited.
The deer eat them right down to the limbs. In the spring, they grow right back up again.
Oh, that's good to know. That's good. So they're not deer resistant, but they're a good appetizer for the deer to do the pruning.
Yeah.
That's right. Now, are you on, is your leshgarden.com on Facebook or Twitter? Are you...
I'm working on it.
You're working on it. Okay. Well, you keep us posted and you let us know when you are join the crazy social web that we all are.
I'm on it personally, but I haven't got my page up yet. I'm in the process of writing a book, and I kind of get lost in that and forget all about everything else.
Yes. What are you? Can you tell us? What are you writing a book about?
Yes. Actually, it's called Lousy to Lush in 10 Steps. And it will be available as an ebook.
An ebook?
And I'll put it on my site and I'll send you a note.
Excellent.
Because anybody can get their garden from lousy to lush, whether it could be 10 days, 10 weeks.
Wow.
10 years.
So you're saying lousy to lush. Uh-huh. Is that what you said? Oh wow.
In 10 steps.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, that's
fun.
Yeah, that's great. Well, congratulations on that. I'm looking forward to hearing about that. And you definitely please let me know, and I will promote away. And I know when you're focused on one thing, you kind of have to run with it, right? Because for fear that those ideas are going to go away.
Oh, I know.
Oh, that's good. That's great. Well, I look forward to helping you promote that. That's wonderful. So is there anything else? So in addition to your ebook, were you speaking anywhere? Is there anything else? I'll give you a few minutes to kind of tell us more about you, Colleen.
I'm speaking about rain gardens, which is one of my pet loves, taking the rain from your roof and making sure it stays on your property and not going into the sewers and stuff, and feed your garden, at the Master Gardener meeting in Peterborough on November the 8th.
Okay.
What else?
And is that open to everyone or just Master Gardeners?
Just Master Gardeners, but if you want to come and you're in Peterborough, get in touch with me and I would be happy you could come as my guest.
Excellent. Excellent. And we have that. So that's an interesting topic. So we may have to touch base about that. We've had Sean James from Fern Ridge Landscaping. He's been on. He's quite a speaker. He's more in the West End of Toronto, but quite an advocate of rain gardens. And I've had Sean on the show.
Great.
But would love to explore it because that's something I've been wanting to learn. I'm hoping in the off season to take a course or to learn a bit more about designing rain gardens.
Well, the course that Green Up in Peterborough, and there's a community rain gardens. They have a certification course on rain gardens that is absolutely fantastic.
Really?
Put on by Rusty, who's probably the best known rain garden person in the upper state.
Okay.
And very worthwhile the money. So.
All right.
And I'm happy to send anybody information about that too. They're having them all across Ontario, as far as I know.
Yeah, Sean just tweeted out some statistics, some insurance statistics that water damage, like insurance. I can't get it. I don't have it handy to quote him exactly, but water now is going to be like the biggest claim, insurance claim over fire. Like it's surpassed it by like 2.5 times.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll forward out that tweet, but water management on a city level, on a municipal level, and on a homeowner's level is become a huge issue. So that's a great topic.
Mm-hmm. It really is, and it's something we all need to know a lot about.
Yeah.
So there is a little bit on my site, but there are lots of sites about it too.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, that's great. So once again, Colleen's site is Lush.
L-U-S-H.
Okay.
Gardens.com.
Well, yep. Thank you. Lush-gardens.com. Excellent. Thank you very much. Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us tonight. And, I did want to talk. There's always more to talk about, but I'm sure we helped all the listeners prepare and confidently know that they aren't too late to look after their roses.
No.
And if they have mounded them a little bit early, they should kind of go out there and just, loosen them up a little bit and wait for that killing frost, and then they can mound them back up again. How does that sound?
That's perfect.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you once again, Colleen, for joining us here on Down the Garden Path, and I'll be in touch.
Thanks a lot. It was a pleasure again.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ann.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye. Well, there you have it. I'm really hoping I haven't done anything yet to my new shrub roses, so I'm happy to know that I am not too late. And I want to thank everybody once again for joining us down the garden path. Next week, I'm looking forward to talking more about November gardening and the last few things that we need to do in our garden. And I'm, always lots to talk about here on Down the Garden Path. And you can all, even between shows, you can always contact me. So please stop by my website at downtoearth.ca, and that's with the number 2. I have a seasonal tips guide as well as a monthly newsletter. My newsletter will be going out the end of this week for the month of November. So please pay attention to that, or feel free to sign up. And if you have any other questions or ideas for next shows or new topics, I would love to hear it as well. So please contact me through any of the social media outlets there. So thank you very much for listening to us here on Down the Garden Path, here on Reality Radio 101, and I look forward to joining you again next week. Bye for now. Welcome to Down the Garden Path, where we just
thank you for listening to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101.